Welcome back, guys. Time to talk to our pal, Ricky Horton. Rick, you're about to talk to the manager, right?
I am. It's not his birthday today. It was yesterday, but what a nice birthday present for him, the Cardinals getting those runs early.
Dude, I got to tell you, I was driving home last night listening to you and John when you made the Grand Slam call. It was so much fun. Like, you guys built it up so much. I'm like, well, I know one thing's not going to happen, a Grand Slam. And then he hits it. That was classic.
Sometimes they oblige you by actually following the script, and sometimes they don't. But I'm glad that he did yesterday. It was really a good moment for him.
It really was. It was great for the Cardinals, great for the game. But Gorman I don't know the guy. He could be a total jerk. He seems like such a sweet kid. You really pull for him. That was fantastic. And then to get another hit.
No, he's definitely a guy to root for. And you know, so he had a multi-hit game. Goldschmidt had a multi-hit game. Actually, five guys did, and that's how you get a big number on the board. And you know, you can't give up on 100 miles an hour pitchers. You can't give up on left-handers ever, anyway, because lefties, of course, are important. And that, I know that from my history. But and you also don't give up on that kind of power. I mean, that's if you're scouting and if you're developing players, you realize that sooner or later they're going to do damage. And yesterday he did.
You know, there are young guys around the league that are hyper talented that are having the same kinds of streakiness. I mean, people, you know, nobody cares when it's not their team, but go look at Julio Rodriguez of the Mariners, who is one of the most gifted five-tool players in the sport, and he is struggling. He's way worse off statistically than Nolan Gorman is. I don't think it's ever been easier to slump for a long period of time than it is right now.
Well, there's more guys throwing 100. There's more guys spinning the ball. There are more pitchers coming at you every single day. You're playing every team. Think about this. You're playing every team. You used to get familiarity with somebody. Now you get less of it, and that usually is an advantage to the pitcher. I don't think we're talking about that enough, frankly. We're playing all 30 teams. So when you prepare for the Angels, I don't know who's in their bullpen, and it takes a lot for a hitter to figure out how to hit them. So you're doing it again. You're preparing for 30 teams instead of your division, your league. I think that just makes hitting tougher.
Rick, to the extent that you know, I watch with great interest, like when Ollie makes a pitching change, he comes out, he hands out new little cheat cards. All the guys have the cheat cards for all the batters, for all the pitchers. How much detail does that go into? Is it more like this guy's going to pull the ball? Okay, fine, I'm going to move to my right. Or is it more in depth?
I am going to get one of those cards from Stubby Clapp. So I know Stubby makes them. Stubby actually has an arts and crafts hour at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon where he makes those cards on a regular basis. And it's honestly hard work. I mean, he does a lot of work to put those things together, and he laminates them himself. He has to bring all the stuff to create those cards. And then they are specific, but the actual info, I've not asked that. I think I can get a general answer from him, but I'm sure it has to do with, number one, how you're going to pitch each of the guys. And it is specific to every pitcher. But then it's also where you defend them. But I think the idea is, you know, we're going to throw this guy a lot of changeups, and that may mean you play in a different place and defend accordingly.
It is so when you're looking at this, like I'm always amazed, Rick, by what the amount of information that now goes into it. Right? I mean, you know, they joke about it, and on the video game MLB The Show, they're doing the play-by-play recorded by real broadcasters, Boog Shambi and I think it's Singleton. And they're talking about how, like, it used to be a guy with a chart and colored pens and pencils, and he was just writing things. But now you're literally looking at tens of thousands of data points and saying, when this guy gets this kind of pitch in this location, this is where he hits it. It's led to outfielders playing 8 feet deeper than they normally do. Well, that's what's killing all the doubles and triples.
That's right. So the adjustments, it led to the shifts initially, that people were doing that. Now they can't do it because it's not illegal to have three guys on one side of the base. But that's where that came from, is all the analytics said, look, why are we putting a guy over there? And so... I think that is a good thing. The information is a good thing, but anything else, I mean, there's a potential for overload of information for both the decision makers and for players themselves in terms of playing this game, because sometimes you just, you know, there's still a feel thing. I mean, should Tommy Lasorda have pinch hit Kurt Gibson in the World Series against Dennis Eckersley? Absolutely not. There's not one number that should say you should pinch hit a guy that can't walk. And that's where he was. And he did. And he had a home run. And Tommy went by feel. And, you know, sometimes that works.
Rick, a couple more questions. If you need to go talk to Ali, you just let us know and we'll let you go.
Sure.
Talk a little bit about just how very special this is with Helsley.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, most days before the All-Star break of any Cardinal reliever ever, and think about, and here's what makes it special. When you talk about any Cardinal reliever ever, you're saying Suter, yeah. Eckersley, Quisenberry, Worrell, Mott, I'm going to miss a whole bunch of them. Lee Smith. I mean, Alex Reyes had an All-Star year as a closer. I mean, and I know I'm missing five people.
Trevor Rosenthal.
Trevor Rosenthal. I mean, you're talking about that being a kind of a valued position in St. Louis. So he's been phenomenal. Here's the other deal, and I'm going to ask Ollie this in a minute, is the importance of what Helsley's doing in the midst of how this team has turned the season around since Mother's Day. You know, what has his value been to that happening? And I'm sure he's going to say what we all think, that it's incredibly important.
And let's hope we see the good Miles Michaelis tonight.
Hope so. Bounce back from the last time. Last time wasn't good, and let's hope it was a blip.
All right, buddy. Good luck tonight. Have a great call, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, my friends. Appreciate it. See you.
The update on Edmund, did he hurt his ankle now?
Yeah, it didn't sound like it was that bad. I don't think it's going to be a major delay. The way it was described was he just kind of rolled it while he was doing some infield work, stepped on the bag and rolled it. So doesn't sound too bad.
So how, I know that we just talked about how good Helsley is. Across the board, though, what he's doing, how special is this? Not just within the Cardinals organization.
I mean, so he's on pace for 60 saves. The record all time is 62.
Wow.
You know, I mean, that was Francisco Rodriguez in 2008. That's the part that's, you know, and look, saves are an imperfect number. Okay. Everybody understands saves are a product of two things: being on a team that wins a bunch of games typically, but also mostly you playing on a team that plays a lot of close games, because you're not getting saves if your team wins 8-2. And this team plays nothing but close games. Every game is
so
close,
true.
Win or lose, which is why it's happening, right? He's had 32 save chances in half a season, but he's only failed on one. And of all jobs, forget the category of saves, but for all jobs in baseball, closer is one where it is pass or fail. You either finish the win or you lose the game, right? It is pass fail, and he has passed 31 out of 32, which is ridiculous. That percentage is ridiculous.
So with the trade deadline coming up, I know that there's thinking going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Is there communication going on right now?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I think the teams are communicating, if not exchanging ideas, at the very least just keeping tabs on, you know, what's going on here. Because they've all had conversations over multiple years, right? Like every front office has had conversations with every other front office about something. And you're trying to get a gauge on, you know, who did they ask us about before? And what do you think? What do? Are they still interested? Do you think we could maybe use those names to make a proposal about this? That stuff's always going on. Mm-hmm. And not always at the executive level, right? It's not always Mo and his counterpart. Sometimes it'll be Gersh and his counterpart. Sometimes it's even an assistant GM. Maybe there's a relationship. Two guys were teammates or whatever. But that level of communication is probably constant.
It's a lot of trust.
Yeah, I mean, and look, a lot of it right now is you sending your people out to get eyeballs on players that you might want to acquire, whether that's the pro scouts looking at, you know, and it's not as simple as that. I mean, analytics departments are analyzing these things too, but you're gathering information about, okay, which starting pitchers might be available now, which ones may not be available now, but could be in 2 weeks if their team goes from three or four games out to seven, eight games out or eight games out. And that's kind of where you're trying to plot. Sometimes you're even, Dave, you're looking for the perfect marriage where, you know, this team might not be a seller, but they have a different need than we do. Mm-hmm. And we have a different depth. Maybe we can do a trade, a baseball trade, not a one team selling and one team buying, but both teams trying to get better kind of deal.
Who would you say are our most valuable assets who are on the block
that you'd be willing to trade?
Yes.
Boy, that's the most difficult question. I'd say most of your non-elite prospects, right? So Jordan Walker is probably not on the block, probably not going to be available. So you're looking at probably guys that would fit into your sixth best prospect and down on the list. I would be surprised if they're talking about trading Tink Hentz, for example. He's their best pitching prospect.
Mustafa?
Yeah, I'm sure he's available. I'm sure all the... But then, you know...
What do you get?
How many people... I mean, most teams have a Gordon Graceffo. Most teams have players like that. So the ones they're going to want are typically the ones you don't want to trade. Typically. I mean, you never know when a team scouted a guy out of high school or college and they've always liked him and they think that they can fix him or they think that he's the guy for them because they've always had him. You never know exactly how that works. But if you're looking at a high-level player, teams are going to be asking you about guys like Brendan Donovan, who you don't want to trade because you need him. They're going to be asking you about Tink Hentz, who's your top pitching prospect.
Why is he not up?
He's just not advanced enough yet as far as workload, right? He's very talented, but he only threw 90 innings last year. And he's on pace for maybe 120 this year. He's not ready to handle a major league workload.
And what's his game?
He's a starting pitcher.
I mean, what's his...
Oh, I mean, mid-90s, easy velocity, can get it up there a little faster than that, good breaking ball. He's a skinny guy. Like, he's very thin. He's kind of built like Carlos Martinez was when he was young. And they've been very careful with him since they drafted him out of high school, you know, as far as, like, the workload that they're putting on him. But super gifted, very athletic, very easy delivery, you know, fast arm, all that kind of stuff.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. DGS and KMOX. 221 DGS. We have the game coming up tonight at 5:40. Tomorrow's game will be rain permitting, 11:35 a.m. And the holiday, of course, tomorrow. Rach, what do you got for us?
All right. There's a new killer lemonade in town. We all remember the Starbucks, or it's not Starbucks, it's Panera, St. Louis Bread Co. Killer lemonade, a favorite of one Andrew Stoll's.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it a lot, too.
Yeah, by the way, parenthetically, did they replace that with anything at all?
No, that was my question for you guys. Was they basically just got rid of it. They could have rebranded it. They could have given it like an energy lemonade name or something, so then people knew what they were getting into. They didn't replace it with anything on their menu, so it kind of blew like this hole wide open in the market, and all of these other people are coming in and trying to fill it. Like Starbucks, they have a new iced energy drink that I tried last night. Pretty good.
Yeah. What effect did it have?
I only took a couple of sips because it was nighttime and I didn't want to be up all night. So then I like de-iced it and saved it for this morning and finished it. And it was just nice. It was like the killer lemonade, Andrew. It just made me feel happy.
Yeah.
And very energetic.
I'm about it. I wanted to get one this morning, but I ran out of time. Had to drag to getting out of the house and had to get here. But
easy day to drag.
Yeah. Hard to not drag this morning. But no, I'm very excited. And yeah, it makes absolutely no sense to me that they didn't just rebrand the. And I guess after, you know, staring down at least two lawsuits, maybe they were just like, you know what, we just want to wash our hands of this entire concept.
They'll be back, though. Like, if everyone else is doing it, they'll come back.
Yeah, they still have all this. They replaced them with, like, just, like, citrus punch or whatever. And it's gross. It sucks. It's like, where's my caffeine?
I still have a really difficult time with this. Like, energy drinks are sold literally everywhere.
He's about to Kevin it.
Yeah, but you know exactly what you're buying. If you have too much of it, then don't buy it.
That was the point. Dude, is that people didn't know what
it was called? Charged lemonade.
That doesn't mean anything.
They were like, charge me up, brother, and they didn't think about what
that's like. So, like, we went to Jimmy John's the other day. They have the firecracker sandwich, right? Which is like a hot sandwich that they're selling now.
Yeah, what do you think that's going to be when it's called firecracker,
Kevin? That's my point. If you ate that and it was like full of caffeine and you didn't know, and you're like, well, it's called firecracker sandwich.
It's a sandwich. There's no. Come on, man.
Come on yourself.
Look at
this is a bad take.
What are all of the energy drink names?
Way to go, Rage.
I'm so sorry.
They're all something of charge or fired
Red
up
Bull,
or energy.
Red
or
Bull, Ghost,
Celsius.
Rockstar, Celsius. None of these involve the word charged,
right,
Kevin.
Right,
this
but
is
what
bad
does
take,
charged
dude.
Mean?
Exactly.
Dave, am I crazy?
No, I think you're saying the same thing.
No, we're not. He's saying
it was misleading, and I'm saying it sounds like.
It's a fair thing to be like, wow, I had no idea the charged lemonades had caffeine because they weren't called caffeinated lemonades. They're called charged lemonades. He's saying if it's called charged lemonades, you should automatically know it has caffeine.
So
yes.
Is your argument that an energy drink is an energy drink, but lemonade's lemonade, and that's what fooled people?
Yes, that's that.
They're not expecting
bro,
it to
it's called
be caffeine.
Charged.
Kevin, people are dead. They're not doing it to milk money out of Panera. People are dead because
there
they
are
didn't
people,
understand.
By the way, who have died from other energy drinks too, because you drink too many of them and you have a heart attack. It has happened in the world. And if you don't know what you're buying, it's on you.
Kevin, these were not marketed as an energy drink. They were marketed as freaking lemonade.
Yeah, right. Andrew is correct. Whenever it first came out, we've been joking about Killer Lemonade for months now, but it originally came into the news because somebody just drank a ton of them, like, on their shift at Panera. They worked at Panera, and they kept drinking it all day long, and then they realized it had caffeine. Like, when they rolled it out, they weren't like, it's a new caffeinated lemonade. They just called it Charged and left it for people to figure out.
I feel like something called Charged is sending you a message. What other message would I receive from that?
They should have kept the lemonades because they're perfectly safe other than the people who died. But no, if you know what you're getting into, you're fine. They should have just changed it to caffeinated lemonade.
Yeah.
And then Andrew and I would have still been happy.
I'm trying to figure out what the other interpretation of charged is.
But see,
for a drink.
But see, you're using the word interpretation. The problem is that there was a need for interpretation.
Right.
That's the issue here. The issue is that there shouldn't be, when you've got something that has times as much caffeine as a Red Bull.
You're arguing that people are dumb, and you're arguing that people are dumb.
I'm arguing that people should have enough common sense to know that if something is called charged, it's not just the normal lemonade.
And I'm arguing that will never, ever happen. You're right, Dave.
And then St. Louis Bread Co., Panera, whatever you want to call it, they had some responsibility in the situation because they just had it out like as a fountain drink where you could get unlimited refills of it. So that kind of sends the message of like, oh, it's fine. I mean, I know they do that with coffee, but there's not as much caffeine in coffee.
If they were smart, they would have played it up.
Yeah.
And they would have been like, you can only get this from behind the counter and you gotta ask for it.
I mean, I'm not saying that they couldn't have done better. Absolutely, they could have and should have done better than that. But people should also have some common sense. When you're buying a product that is called charged, it's called that for a reason, right?
Yeah, but if there was like a candy and it was like charged Sour Patch Kids,
I would assume something in there is extra or different, and then I would look to see what that means.
I guess. Well, Starbucks has their hands around the situation, and they are calling their new drinks iced energy beverages, which it's like, okay, that's what Panera should have done from the jump.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Panera could just bring it back and call it energy lemonade or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sorry everybody fought. That was sad.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 234. If you're listening on 1120, check out 98.7. You can also stream us at Odyssey.com. You can download the Odyssey app. You can be one of the millions of people that download our podcast. Thank you very much for that. It's a huge feather in our cap. We're going to be doing a big national push. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but my company, Odyssey, has more shows, more stations, and more podcasts than anyone in the world. And they're going to be pushing us against, like, you know, Rogan shows like that. Not that we're going to be at that level, but we'll be competing on a national level, all because you have downloaded the show so many times. You got the attention of the brass upstairs, and we appreciate it. Just an update. For those of you who are engaged in and interested in what's going on with Joe Biden, it appears, my take, is that we have scared the squirrel back into the woods. Drudge had a front page headline saying with a picture of Kamala Harris saying it's her party now. Who's she going to pick for her running mate? They just did a big, long one-hour press conference and were really pinning Jean-Pierre up against the wall. And she came out and said that the president has directly said that he is in for the long haul and he is not stepping aside. So could have gone another way. Maybe had the Dems been less aggressive. Could still happen, I guess, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen because now he's doubling down, said that it's not an excuse, it's an explanation, but his explanation for why he had such a poor performance, which he acknowledges, is that he made a mistake in traveling abroad right before the actual debate, that he was jet-lagged, even though he had 11 days to recover, and that he had a cold and just a bunch of stuff that a president of the United States should be able to do whatever age you're at, or you shouldn't be doing the job. Just my two cents. That about sum it up? I mean, is that fair?
Pretty much. I mean, I know because I've done sports for so long, I see a lot of things through that lens. It's okay to come out and just say I sucked. We don't need the explanation. We don't need the extra because all it does is sound bad.
You just nitpick.
It just sounds bad.
Yeah. Frankly, it's a very Trumpian response to go like, well, I only lost because I was jet lagged and I had a cold and I had stubbed my toe and the cue card was too far away, and it was too warm in the room. You know what I mean? Like, just immediately spouting out as many excuses as you can think of for why you turned in such a poor performance.
I think, other than something I don't understand, which is what it's like to give up the presidency or to give up the chance at it or to be the first lady or whoever the players are. I don't understand that. It may be so absolutely impossible to give up that we're all just talking to each other, not understanding. Yeah. But other than that, I don't understand what he doesn't understand about what a hero he would be if he did this. And there's no lose. If you drop out and the Democrats lose, it's not your fault. And if you drop out and they win, then you get the credit.
Oh, I think plenty of people would hold him responsible if he dropped out and the Democrats lost.
Yeah, you're probably right.
If he dropped out and they lost, yeah, I think the majority of people on like the Democrat side, and I'm talking about like the hard Democrat, like not necessarily the farther left, but the hard Democrats that are, you know, vote blue no matter who or whatever types, they're going to hold him responsible.
I'm less concerned with Trump, the person, this second time around than I am the people around him, the people who are trying to turn the country into a theocracy in the southern states, in Oklahoma. They are emboldened, and they're trying to turn this into a Christian national theocracy. That's my concern far more than Trump pulling shenanigans.
I mean, I think it's all tied together.
Yeah, I mean, you can't have one without the other, so.
Audio?
Yeah, speaking of this whole situation, so I don't know if it's just my Twitter, but Kamala is absolutely blowing up on Twitter. It's kind of a joke. It's kind of not a joke. I think there are plenty of people who are ready to embrace her if she does become the nominee. And then I think there are a lot of people who are just kind of leaning in and tongue in cheek saying like, yeah, I want Kamala Harris to be president. So there's a ton of jokes and a ton of memes. And I don't know when Trump did this interview with Tucker Carlson, but this is kind of a resurfaced clip of them talking about Kamala. I just thought it was kind of a funny clip.
She has some bad moments. Her moments are almost as bad as his. I think his are worse, actually.
Yeah. But she seems pretty senile, too.
She speaks in rhyme. You know, it's weird. It's weird. But she has bad moments. And
in rhyme? What do you?
Well, the way she talks, the bus will go here and then the bus will go there because that's what buses do. And it's weird. The whole thing is weird. This is not a president of the United States future. And I think they probably have some kind of a primary. And
all right. So first of all, that's not rhyming. That's rhythm. But also, like, I do think have we all forgotten the Trump weird things? I mean, he literally a week ago was talking about, well, if he had to be electrocuted or eaten by a shark, which, like, that's not presidential. That's not normal. That's not a conversation that a person running for high office would be having. Mm-hmm. And you've got all the times where he's like, where he does his sing-songy thing. You know, they're going to do the be-de-de-de.
Yeah, but he's a man and he's been president before. So it's easy to just brush that under the rug. It's easy to pick on a woman for being weirder or, you know, the whole thing is like, oh, people don't like her because she seems nervous. That's the number one issue is she just seems nervous being in front of people. Mm-hmm. And that's not typically like a male trait in politics other than like a Ron DeSantis. Who just felt
and
uncomfortable
it blew him
in front
up.
Of right, exactly. Yeah. But I think it's easy to pick on her from Trump's perspective because he's already been president, so he can kind of say whatever he wants and be like, she's not like me, she's not doing it as well as I did. I just thought it was really funny when he was like, it's weird.
It's like, weird. Like the guy who says some of the weirdest things you've ever heard.
I also have a Kamala thing if you guys want to hear it. This is one of my favorite Kamala things recently. This is from a month or so ago. Here, I'll hit it.
Sorry, I thought you were playing it.
You're all good. I got it.
Madam Vice President, Hamas says it accepted a ceasefire deal. Hamas has accepted a ceasefire deal. Your reaction?
What are your thoughts on Hamas accepting a ceasefire deal?
She walks out of a restaurant with like her to-go bag. And everybody starts asking her, like, you know, Hamas has accepted a ceasefire. Well, will you pressure Israel to accept it as well? And she goes, shrimp and grits.
I didn't hear what she said. Play it again, then.
Madam Vice President, Hamas says it accepted a ceasefire deal. Hamas has accepted a ceasefire deal. Your reaction?
What are your thoughts on Hamas accepting a ceasefire deal?
Okay. You think he fell on the coconut tree?
I also hate those two guys. I hate people that do things like that. Like, what do you think about this thing?
The ambush.
Okay. Stop it.
Shrimp and grits. And like, she doesn't even seem to. It's not like she's being a smart aleck. Like, that seems to be her genuine response.
Yeah,
she's
she doesn't know what they're talking about.
She's like, shrimp and grits. Yeah. Good stuff.
I mean, she does have her moments. Like, what was the interview she did where she gave, like, total nonsense answers to...
Yeah, the word salad.
Yeah, that bothers me a lot more than any awkwardness or weird moments or anything like that.
Yeah, I wonder if she could take Trump, and by take Trump, I mean in a debate.
Mm.
If she could stand up to him. That would be fascinating to see.
Should that be... I don't want to say the deciding factor, but should that be a primary thing?
Yes.
Like, how will you present next to him on stage? You
I think so.
Yeah.
I think to get to the important stuff, like running the country and being the commander in chief, you have to get through Trump. And to get through Trump, you have to be able to stand up to him. I was talking to someone just today about this. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but Trump has a tell, like when you're playing poker. Go back and watch the clip of David Letterman years and years ago. Obviously, he's been off the air for years and years when he was making fun of Trump because his America First ties were made in China. And Trump gives a look. He smiles without showing his teeth. And he gave a look like, you got me. What am I going to say? And he did that same look about 8 times during the debate the other night when it was Biden calling him out on things. You're a felon. You slept with a porn star. You did this. You did that. He has this weird tell where when he's caught at something, he just kind of smiles and goes, eh?
Yeah, the frog face where he kind of raises his eyebrows too. Like,
hmm. Yeah. And to me, it's an absolute tell. You can tell when he's been caught at something because when he's not, he fights back like a demon.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do some more audio here. We have some... older stuff from Wheels. Like, what is this backing in thing?
All right, just play. We always have this little, why do people back into spots? What's wrong with you when you do that? This explains it.
Why do people back into a parking space?
There's only 3 reasons for this. Number one, obviously, so you do not have to back out. Number two, so I can escape quicker than you if I'm being chased by a murderer. And number three, and the most obvious, I'm better than you.
Disagree.
Makes me mad every time I see that Camaro.
I think if you're backing in just so you don't have to back out, you might have anxiety issues.
Well, you're gonna have to back up one way or the other, right?
Exactly.
So you either do it at the beginning or the end. What's the difference?
Because most of us find backing out easier than backing in.
Oh, I don't.
Yeah. Because you're a superhero.
Well, no, I have a camera in the back of my car. It shows me exactly where I'm going.
And you're a rich superhero. Not all of us have cameras. I don't have a camera.
Well.
Now, I do have a guy I hired to sit in the back seat to say 8 inches, 6 inches.
But actually, and Andrew and I talked about it a little bit in the office the other day. The real ideal world is the pull through. Like, that's the move.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the move.
That's
the best
when
you can
get
hope
that,
for.
That's sweet.
I think we all agree on that. Yeah. But I very much prefer backing in there's a contingency with this, which is if it's crowded in the parking garage and there are like 3 cars behind me, I'm not going to make them wait to back in. I will just pull into the spot. But when there's nobody around, then that's why you do it in advance, because it might be crowded later and you got a little advantage.
Is the great hot dog condiment debate just stupid?
Yes. Except the mayo one. That's wrong.
What do you mean?
Once again, it's what do you put on your hot dog? Mustard is number one with 73%. Ketchup is number two at 62%, which a lot of people think is just an anathema to put ketchup on a hot dog. Relish coming in number 3. The only things acceptable to America: mustard, ketchup, relish, onions, and chili.
I don't think you should put anything on a hot dog. I think that you're diluting the flavor of the hot dog. If your hot dog needs,
but you want to put a burger on your hot dog.
because that will enhance it. Here's the thing: if you're putting
that's what the mustard and ketchup
I don't
do.
Think
no,
you should put putting, anything on a hot dog. What about hamburger?
Except a hamburger. Now listen,
that enhances the flavor.
Now listen, because that's the same type of meat. It's just
no,
an
it's
enhancement
not.
Of the type of meat. So if
he's
you need go, to
he's
play,
gonna go ballistic in about need, 10 seconds.
If you need to put ketchup and onions and all these powerful flavors on your hot dog, you need to buy better hot dogs. You need to shell out some dough. Come on.
You're talking like Kamala Harris. You're
rhyming.
Yeah.
I exist in the context of who I am and all that came before me and my hot dogs.
So there's always a new trend in weddings and such. The new trend is the non-invite. You let friends know that you're getting married when and where you're getting married, but they're not invited, but a gift is appreciated.
Good luck.
I'm not getting you a gift if I'm not invited to your party. Sorry.
The guts.
That's like etiquette 101. It's kind of a give and take type of situation.
Just crazy. A bomb squad in China detonated an old grenade found in a 90-year-old woman's home. She had been using it as a hammer for the last 20 years.
What?
I am shocked right now. That is, I mean, I'm so glad that she was protected and nothing bad happened, but...
Said it was from World War II, and it was some kind of a hand grenade I'm not familiar with, but it has a like a wooden handle on it. And she
is it the German one? That one's a, yeah.
I guess so. And yeah. She was using it for 20 years as a hammer.
That is just some good luck right there.
Yeah.
Because they detonated it, so it was live. It was hot.
Yes. Yes. It could have blown up at any time. People are sharing the evil but brilliant hacks they're using for parenting to fool kids. For example, changing the time on the clock to make them go to bed an hour early. Saying that the ice cream truck plays music, that they only do that when they're out of ice cream.
Okay, so lying to your children.
Lying to your kids.
I mean, just assert your authority. You're the person in charge.
Right.
Hey, guess what? You're going to bed now.
Yeah, I mean, is that supposed to make your kids respect you more? Like, yeah, you wouldn't listen to me, so I just started never telling you the truth. Like, oh, okay, thanks,
Mom and Dad.
Don't
be such a wimp.
Did you ever wimp out with your kid?
I mean, I gave in, yeah, but not like that. Like, if it was time for bed, it's time for bed. I'm not changing the clock to trick you.
How are the teenage years?
I feel like I was just really lucky because my kid was very chill. Like when she was young, just raising your voice was compliance. Like she would just be like, okay. So.
Oh, it helps that she has the loudest dad.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a fair
it's
point.
All relative.
That's a fair point. No, I mean, look, teenage years are teenage years, but I didn't have any of the problems, issues, things that a lot of other friends and family members have had. So I kind of think I got lucky.
Did she get along with Susan pretty well too?
Yeah. I mean, again, normal, you know, occasional tension.
Yeah.
But again, a lot of it is they're both at home when I'm coaching baseball or
See,
I'm off somewhere
you're
else.
You're lucky. You had a little Susan. I had a little me.
Yeah. No, you're right. Not only are they like twins, if you look at their childhood pictures, they are physical twins. Like they look exact. But they also both have the calm demeanor. They're quiet, you know, kind of, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. It would have been different if it
like
was a
Nick.
Kid like me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I don't think there's any question. If my kid had my personality, it would have been a lot more.
I actually said to Maureen when she may have even been pregnant, you're so lucky to have me because I'm such an amazing father because Nick had been so easy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, part of it was Nick was lying to me a lot, like in junior high and high school, but fair enough. He got away with it. But he was just such an easy kid to raise. And then Phoebe came out with horns. I mean, she's the center of my universe. We're going to Colorado together tomorrow. But
believe it or not, I was the opposite. As a kid, I was the easiest kid in the world. My mom will say that I was the most chill kid, always easy to manage. My brother was the one with the temper. And somehow, as I got older, I got worse. And as he got older, he got calmer.
When did the overlap take place?
I think I crossed over probably around 13, 14.
Crossed over.
Can you imagine?
And it got like
wheeling.
Every.
I
oh,
no.
It wasn't that bad. That was still
I
manageable.
Can. I think we see him.
Yeah, no. No, what you're seeing is about 18, 19.